Yo, what up? It's your boy Owen J.J. Stone, a.k.a. Doctor. It's episode 15 of Doc Tales, a woo-woo. I am going to tell you stuff that you don't have. If you don't have any money, subscribe on YouTube. If you got money, throw it at Patreon. Subscribe on iTunes, Android, whatever you want. Or don't do anything. Just listen to the interview. Because today, I have what I like to call a party friend. Now, usually, I have people on here that I know really well and I know a bunch of stuff. This is a friend I call party friend. Party friend's like, you know, you hang around the same people. You go to the same events. You know each other. But they're usually on the other side of the room. And you don't really talk to each other. But it's like, I know that person. And every once in a while, you get to interact with the person. She's like, I miss you so much. And why are we close with friends? And that is this friend. This friend is Becky Worley. I can list all the stuff she does for a living, but it's too long and we ain't got that much time. So say hi to the people, Becky.
Hello, oh doctor. I'm honored to be your party friend. You know, I am like you, a parent of 9-year-old people. As I recall, is that how old your daughter is?
Yeah, she's 9, about to be 10, so you're right on target.
See, I have the 9-year-old twins, and what I notice about friendships as a parent is they disappear completely. So if I can have workday Skype party friendships, this is good for me too. So I'm in.
It really is the best way to catch up, because I figure if I'm going to talk to somebody, I might as well record it and then have a double entendre of the conversation. That way it seems like I'm doing something and I get to check in on people. Because you and me actually directly have never had like a time to like interact and talk to each other. And
no, we've been on Twit together a lot.
Yes. And again, you've been in the atmosphere of conferences and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I got to find Becky. And then you know how it is. You don't find anybody. And we got all the same friends. It's like, she's close enough to be my friend that it's okay. I could bother her in the afternoon to talk about stuff. So
remind me, you're in Jersey, right?
I am in Jersey. I'm in an undisclosed black site location of New Jersey, but I am in New Jersey. Everybody thinks I live in New York or LA, which is interesting enough because, you know, when you travel, people assume that you live there because you can live in a city and not see someone for 3 years and it's okay. So
everyone assumes I live in New York, but I am in the lovely Oakland, California. So I, you know, it is a beautiful California day here. There is green in the air around us. You guys are in stick season, aren't you? It's still muddy.
Today it's 45 degrees. Yesterday it was 74 degrees. The day before that it was 70 degrees. So it's like there was a flying house the other day. I almost lost my mind. I'm like, it's February. There's no rhyme or reason for there to be a fly right now. And it drove me insane. So talking about the children, do you call your children small people? Are you one of those people that call your people small people?
They're the kids, okay. Small humans, okay. Animals.
That seems to be the new age thing, the small human thing. And I'm like, I got to let them know that I'm better than them. They can't rise to human level until they start paying their own way. I can't give it to them. They're kids, little ones, minions, puppets.
That's right. There is a very clear power structure in your home and
yes,
mine.
Yes, yes. So we were talking before we started about you coaching. What are you coaching?
Right now I'm coaching boys rugby. I have 40 boys under U10, actually 37 boys and 3 girls on my teams. In the spring and the fall, I coach girls soccer. So boys rugby in the winter and girls soccer in the spring and fall.
They have rugby out there? Okay.
Yes. You're stay rugby out where you are. Don't you worry. You can get your daughter involved.
I will look for rugby. I haven't heard of rugby. We have like the most obscure thing is like field hockey. We don't even have a lot of lacrosse out this way.
You got some of that. Some of that.
I'm sure if we went north there would be. but yeah. So anyway, how long have you been coaching?
This is my 4th year coaching rugby and this will be my 2nd season coaching soccer. I played soccer in college. I played rugby for 15 years after college. But given that my day job is in television, I'm a consumer and technology reporter for Good Morning America. I've been doing that for like the last 12 years. Rugby and on-camera television work are not really complementary to each other. I can remember being at the bottom of a ruck once and covering my face with my hands, screaming out, "No, I'm going to be on CNN Monday," and trying not to get stepped on.
And nobody believes you, and you say, "Well, I got in a rugby tussle, and that's how this happened." Okay, rugby, right, because you play rugby. Okay.
I broke my nose 3 times in the same year. I guess that was about 13 years ago. And I just remember the makeup people were just like, by the 3rd time I came in, I had the double black eyes and they were just so frustrated with me.
That is terribly amazing. I love you so much right now. You have no idea. Like, my love for you just went from like 92% to like 115. Like, it's like over 100. Like, you got a reserve. Like, you can mess up like 8 times and still be over 100 with me right now. Especially raising a daughter. She does jiu-jitsu, soccer, karate, basketball. She plays every sport. She plays softball. So she really likes sports. And we don't have, again, in this area, they don't have a lot of variety. You know, next year I'm going to try and get her into wrestling, just as a transition from the jiu-jitsu thing. And she's younger, where all everybody's body frame is kind of the same still. They're in that age where it's not like a big deal, because I wrestled in high school, and that was always the worst thing. When you wrestled a girl, it didn't matter what happened. If you win, you beat a girl. If you lose, you lost to a girl.
I've always wondered about that. That seems like a really challenging mixed gender sport. And I think now they have more girls wrestling leagues.
Yeah.
So that it's a lot less stressful that way. But I always thought you're in a horrible position as a guy wrestling a girl.
Yeah. When you get into high school, there are a lot more females now. When I was in high school, there wasn't that many. So again, like, as a guy, you would get hounded all week. You better not lose to this girl. You better not lose to this girl. And then the coach is telling you, like, yo, don't hurt her. Don't hurt her. You know what I mean?
So
it was an impossible mission of double standard. And the worst part is, if there's a girl wrestling, dollars to donuts, she's about that life. And she's not giving you any breaks. So... like when you step out on that mat, this girl is trying. So you, it was so weird, and funny, and even so, I'm gonna try to get her to do that, because she wants to play football, and obviously, even at that young age, her mom doesn't want her doing that, and I really don't want her doing that either.
Yeah, that's a tough call at this age, especially when they're trying to fix the game to make the head injury issues less prevalent. It's really hard to put your kid into a contact sport where you know it's – I think in concussion research it goes football, hockey, lacrosse, and then rugby is right up there too, probably fourth or fifth in terms of prevalence per 1,000 injuries. And it's just really hard as a parent to do that, you know, to figure out, how do I get comfortable with this?
And rugby is one of those situations where, in my mind, in the future, I feel like that's where football is going to devolve down to in some format, because there is something to be said when you have this protection. It enables you the power to launch yourself at another individual. If you took that helmet off, you would not launch head first into someone to try and take them out. You just wouldn't do it. You naturally would do the proper techniques when you practice without a pad on, or do whatever you're supposed to do. So...
yeah, Pete Carroll has already gone to some of the rugby teams in Seattle and had them work with the Seahawks on their tackling technique. And, you know, you could fix some of these issues in football so fast if you, A, I think the helmet is an issue, and then you have to lose a lot of the other padding.
Yeah.
Number two is, I think the biggest thing is that they're not forced to wrap in their tackles. In rugby, if you don't wrap with your arms as you make a tackle, that's a penalty. In football, you can keep your arms tight, your shoulders in, and there you just shoulder spear, which it becomes a head spear in so many cases where the tackler gets hurt as much as the tacklee. I mean, they're doing a good job with defenseless receiver, but I just feel like there's so much more room for them to improve in football.
And hopefully they will do that. So last thing, and we're going to get out of sports. But,
right, this became sports ball talk.
We totally did. And technically, I love it. And people are going to be like, you're talking tech people. Why are you and just stay in your lane? You don't know anything about sports. You're just a tech woman in the technology. You talk about – that thing drives me crazy when someone says – like when someone says it to an athlete, hey, stick to sports. I want the athlete every time to turn around to say, hey – you stick to flipping burgers or flipping whatever and don't talk about sports, because I'm sure you go to the bar and act like you've been coaching for 30 years. You've never been in the league. You don't know anything about it. You stay in your lane. Like, it's so insane for people to say that to people.
My lanes merge. I am the tech reporter in America who is the best damn tackler you ever met. And I'm not even that good of a tackler. I got some other skills that are better. But, you know, I got two lanes, baby.
You're already at 115. Don't push it any harder. You got a family. Don't make me come out there to get you. Look, I mean, I kidnapped you, put you in trouble. Like, I need Becky in my life. She's amazing. So this is the most jerry-rigged situation. I'm going to show you this picture, see if you can see it. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So This is a situation where the person with the black shirt is standing up next to the girls huddled down.
That might be you.
No, it wasn't me. But my daughter is this picture right here. My daughter's in a playoff game. This is the opposing coach talking to the team at halftime. This is my coach at halftime not talking to the girls at all. This is the girls huddle themselves together and call plays. Now, here's the problem. Great. My coach didn't talk to the girls at all during their halftime break. The other coach is coaching the girls up for 10 minutes. They come out and shut us down for the third quarter. And as I'm sitting there and I'm talking to the guy, I yelled across the court. Now, normally, I'm the dad that my daughter's lost every game in the soccer season. I don't care. I just want them to learn the game and have fun. Losing isn't a big deal to me. This year, they won a lot because this one girl on the team is like Michael Jordan, and she elevated the team. But it made the coach, who's his second year coaching, lazy. He didn't teach the girls anything, and he ran practices very poorly because, oh, Raynell's going to do it. So when I look at halftime and the girls are out there and my coach isn't even talking to them, I'm like, dude, talk to the girls. Coach them up. This is embarrassing. The girls huddled themselves together and I asked my daughter, what were you guys talking about? She's like, well, we were trying to call plays and say we were going to try and have such and such get down to the middle. And I'm like, that is so sad.
I don't know. I mean, but I see it both ways. Like I wasn't there, but I do see what you're saying about like the coach getting more involved and giving them some structure. But I also love that the girls were trying to self-regulate and trying to figure it out for themselves. And maybe down the line, like I wish that could have been the one that had the happy ending of we coached ourselves and we figured out how to win. And love that independence.
That's the part that makes me want to tear up because I'm like, oh my God, they're doing it themselves because you're not doing your job. And it drives me crazy. And then at the end, you know, because I was just furious. She tried to talk to all the kids, and I told my daughter, like, get out of that huddle. She's like, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, you didn't want to talk to them at halftime. Don't talk to them out there all crying. And everybody's all sad. And it's just like, oh, it drives me crazy. I know it's participation, and I know whatever. And like you said, there's two sides to see to it. But my goodness, it drives me crazy. As a coach, I assume that no one ever else can do that in a lifetime. So anyway, back to something that people care about that's not sports related. You're like the kind of person, kind of like Tom Merritt, where you've had a billion jobs, but it's not because you're a horrible person. you look at the resume, and you're like, well, what is she doing? And it's like,
right?
Well,
I've been all over the map, man.
It's a different kind of progression, though, especially like I have a lot of friends in San Francisco in the tech industry. And you know how it is. You're working with a company. They either transition or you get another opportunity. And so you move and you change. And it's fun in a way because you get to chase what you want to do and find expression in what you want in the job. What was your favorite job ever?
My favorite job ever. I love GMA because I basically get paid to be curious. And it's not always the subject matter that I would choose. Today I'm doing a story about hearing loss. Last week I was doing a story about a database that got hacked of children's toys. It's all over the map. And I love that, like, exposure to everything. I had a lot more autonomy when I worked for Yahoo. I had a series there called Upgrade Your Life, and I could pretty much do anything. I did everything from what's the fastest way to chill a beer to do you really need a case to protect your screen from getting cracked? I loved that autonomy and that curiosity around tech at a time when we were all kind of trying to learn how to use our tech in better ways. I feel like to some extent that technology curve and the learning curve is a little bit flatter these days than it was maybe even 7 years ago. It's a little bit more, the industry is a little bit more commoditized so that you're not trying to figure out every phone being so different. People's computers seem to last longer. We kind of know where we are with security, which is you're either doing two or three things to protect yourself and the rest of it, you're basically hosed and at the mercy of larger forces and bigger companies. Whereas in the old days, it was really teaching people how to protect themselves on a day by day, basis. So I guess my favorite job was probably that Yahoo series. I really enjoyed it. I also hosted a show for the Travel Channel, which you would think would be the most amazing job ever.
That's a lot of work.
Be careful what you wish for, because when you work for the Travel Channel, guess what you do all the time? travel.
Yeah, yeah.
It was constant. I was never home.
It's one of those things where, like, you have a 4-minute segment. It took me 5 days to get here. Like,
right? It's
not a game. I've had other friends that have worked there. I actually did a little piece. I wish Yahoo would have taken off more with their creative content, because I remember years ago I was doing something with one of the PR companies, doing stuff with them, and we were doing movie review things and stuff like that, like just social media people just side things, and they were just doing so much fun stuff, and I'm like, man, I didn't even know Yahoo was doing all this stuff. And then, but it just never,
that was the problem, that discovery was a huge issue with Yahoo. So they were doing all this stuff, but unless you got picked for the front page, you never got seen.
Yeah.
And it was really, it's still a pretty tough model there, because we call it the lighthouse. You know, it's either completely dark or the light of the front page is shining on you. And it's, you know, that place, to mix my metaphors, it's a fire hose of traffic when you land there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it is really sad. They were doing some cool stuff. They had Yahoo Autos and movies.
Yeah, they had a lot of different things going on, and it just never came to fruition from what I saw when I found out. I'm like, oh, this is great. Because sometimes people aren't as open creatively, and they're pretty much like, hey, do this and say whatever you want, do whatever you want, we'll throw it up there and give it a go. And that way it's more natural, which is what people quote unquote want in that kind of other content when it's not super produced. What was your favorite subject in school?
PE, and then probably English and biology. I mean, sciences are so much fun. I love watching my kids be interested in the sciences.
Do you make them suffer through things? Do you have them play with things like little bits or what's that new thing? There's like it's like a crate thing. It comes once a month. It's like a technology
Kiwi
thing.
Crate.
Kiwi crate. There it is.
Isn't that's that what it's
it.
Called?
Yes. That's exactly
there. You know, my kids, I have a really, I'm not full Waldorf with them in that I ask them to, you know, I'm really interested in the relationship of kids and technology. And I sort of feel like, you know, your point about little bits or coding games, love that stuff. But what I really notice with kids nowadays is so many of them don't have a healthy relationship with gadgets. And I say that handing a kid a gadget is a lot like handing a kid a bottle of tequila. And I'm a little nervous about that, because I know how my relationship with the first few bottles of tequila went that were in my hands. And so I'm pretty restrictive with my kids on technology. I basically, they can use gadgets on the plane. They can watch TV on the weekends, and they can, my daughter loves, as she puts it, microscopic Word. So she likes to type, and she's just, when we were, the last thing she did, she typed 12 songs from Hamilton by memory. And I mean, just like, that's the kind of stuff that I love it when they use a computer as a tool, but I pretty much don't let them use it as a toy.
Okay. So I am the exact like opposite of you, but with restrictions. So my daughter has had a phone and or tablet since she was 4, her own device. By the grace of Jiminy Christmas, she hasn't broken one. But we have rules about when she's in the car, she has to read a book. There's no tablets in the car. So her friends get in the car and they're like, oh, let's put on a thing. And she's like, she hands them a comic book or a graphic novel or whatever. And she's like, we have to read in the car. And I got pictures of like all the girls in the back just read it. And they're happy and content. Oh. So either listen to music or you read. Same thing in the house. She has to read a book a week. She can have her phone whenever she wants. So she's musically and she's watching YouTube videos. And I let her go just to find out what she would watch. So she watches a lot of this one stupid Minecraft show. But another thing she watches is those top 10 ways to survive in the wilderness. She's like, Dad, did you know that blah, 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 blah? I'm like, okay, if you ever had a seizure, Dad, I would know what a seizure, like. And I'm like, what are you watching? You know, she just like consumes information. For Christmas this year, I asked her what she wanted. And last year I asked her what she wanted. She said, I already have everything. I don't need anything.
Aww.
Which is great for a kid to say. This year she said, I want to learn how to make a video game. So we started doing Code Swift. And then I found this app, not app, it's actually a physical game board where you take a picture with the tablet and you can make the characters and make the board, kind of like Mario style.
Oh, cool.
It was only $40. So we sat there on Christmas Day. We made a video game. Then we took it to her friend's house and she played it. So I give her full autonomy of that because, one, I want to be ingrained in her life. So when She's had a device for so long. Now her friends are starting to get phones. She's sitting in a car with her friend. Oh, only three people liked my video. She says, it's not about the likes. You made the video because you wanted to make it. It's something you wanted to make. The likes don't matter because I've been coaching her on it and teaching her on it. You know, we sit down together and she lets me read her comments. She shows me all her posts. She shows me her friends' posts. So she's comfortable. So that way, thank Lord, I don't have to spy on her and be like, what are you doing? What's going on there? She wants to show me because we've been doing it for so long and I don't hound on her. You know what I mean? Like, she did a song with cuss words in it. She covered her mouth. I didn't yell at her. I didn't say, oh, why are you doing that? Hey, you already policed yourself.
Right.
Let it go. So as to where you're doing it, probably the better way. I'm doing it in a modified of the better way.
I don't know about that. See, the thing I would disagree with you on saying that there's a better or worse way is that what you have is you have a clear cognitive sense of what your values are around technology. And you have conveyed that to your child and let her work within that structure to make her own worldview of technology. That's my thing is you just got to figure out what your values are around it and then convey that to your kids. Second thing, you got to work with the kid you have. My daughter, I would probably be totally fine with that same structure. My son is a totally different person around technology. And ever since he's been little, when he gets a gadget in his hand, he is he's another person. And if you try and take it away from him, he is a demonic person. So, you know, it's kid by kid. And I think it's really important for people to have a big picture value structure, which you clearly do and have done a good job conveying.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing for me. When I would ever see a kid rage out or freak out, I'm like, look, that's why sometimes I just check her. I'm like, hey, put your phone down. I take it from her for a few days. Or like if I feel like so the one time I went in her room and she was sleeping, she was reciting the one show, Pat and Jen, that she watches so much in her sleep. She woke up. I'm like, yo. No more Pat and Jen for 2 weeks. She's like, what? I'm like, nah, we're good with Pat and Jen.
Yeah.
Like, we're done. Like, I knew what she was repeating because I had heard the show and I knew what she was saying. Like, she's playing the show in her mind in her sleep. I'm like, no. Like, they could be brainwashing her to kill me in my sleep. I don't know what's going on in Pat and Jen. They got subliminal YouTube messages sending all these little kids out here to do their bidding and steal stuff and rob banks. I can't trust it. No more Pat and Jen. So
this is where I feel like such a hypocrite because I know exactly what you're talking about because I went through that myself. I remember I used to, when I was in college, I was studying for a Japanese test. So I was trying to learn all those little characters. And at the same time, to relieve stress, I was playing Tetris. And then I would go to sleep and I would imagine the Japanese characters trying to fit into the Tetris cubes. And I'm like, oh my God, I am way overboard on this. Time out.
Yeah. You got to self-police yourself, especially because binge watching is a thing. It's a natural occurrence in your mind. It pleases you to know that there's a never-ending waterfall coming. That's why people get so upset at the end of a 10-season series. We're watching Smallville together now. It's 10 seasons. We're 6 seasons in. I watched it growing up, so I already know everything. But she's like, Dad, what are we going to watch when this ends? This can't end. Like, I can't, you know what I mean? Like, she's freaking out. Like, people are dying now because they're so deep into it. She's like, ah, they're dying. You know, so I totally get that. It's just nature. We just got to watch ourselves and monitor a little bit. Best vacation place. Where's the best place you ever been?
Well, you know what my hometown is, Maui.
Yeah.
So I'm afraid to say that I have yet to beat Hawaii for going on vacation. I mean, I just got back last week. We were there and I just cannot. The warm air, everyone always says you get off the plane and the air is soft. It's like the flowers are already in the air.
I haven't been to Hawaii since I was little, so I can't remember. I'm slacking on my Hawaiian vacation.
You got to get to the 808.
I'll get myself back on track and maybe take the kids so she can see the water. She wants to get to an island somewhere and get kidnapped by the waves. Fair food.
I was going to ask you what your favorite vacation place is.
My favorite vacation place, honestly, was when I went to China, when I was in Shanghai. I actually, you know, people love Tokyo and I love Tokyo too, but Tokyo is so Tokyo that it's like, all right, you're New York on crack with like weird stuff. When I was in Shanghai, it was just nice because it was such a flow of like modern and technology. Like the people were all great everywhere I went. Like every restaurant I went to, I never paid for food. People treated me like they either thought I was a football player or a wrestler or something. I went through customs when I got there, and they held me up. Everybody had left, and they're speaking Chinese. I don't speak Chinese. I was going there to hang out with a German exchange student who was there going to school. So I didn't speak any Chinese. They held me there. I was there like 15 minutes. I almost started to cry because I was there by myself, and I was like, what did I do? Like, what's right? going on? You see all the stuff on TV. 11 of the other guards all come out of their booths and they're just standing around me. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm really starting to freak out. And then the one woman's like, you football? And I'm like, oh, you think I'm somebody important? Oh God. Oh yeah. No, I don't. Yeah. You want to take pictures? Let's take pictures. And we took pictures and stuff like that. One of the guards at the school, military guards, never spoke to anybody. The fourth day he saw me, he waved, and she's like, he waved at you? And I'm like, yeah. Before I left, he's like, you leave? And I was like, he sat there and had somebody translate, talk to me for like 15 minutes. He's like, he didn't talk to anybody. We've been here for a year. And I'm like, yeah. But everywhere I went, it was like, man, I was like Godzilla in that piece. Everybody loved me. So that was my favorite place to go. Like, you'd be on a bus. There's TV screens all over the place. You could watch a show or whatever. Then you get off the bus, and there's a guy in the street, instead of a street sweeper, using a straw broom and a wooden cart, sweeping up a major city street. Like,
wow.
There was so much just everything. So much culture, right. And you know, you can go sit in skyscrapers, like we're in the tallest building. It was just great. I got the food was good. I ate some frog legs, some fish eyes, and did all
chicken
that
feet?
Weird stuff.
Did you eat the chicken feet?
I didn't eat chicken feet. I'm black, so I've already had chicken feet in my repertoire. pig's feet, all that kind of stuff. Squirrel, snake, alligator. What's the weirdest thing you ever ate?
Well, I've eaten a sea cucumber. I've eaten a live shrimp. You know,
what?
We did it. Yeah. Well, I did a survival class in high school, and so we had to, and it was in Hawaii, so we had to figure out how to, like, you put me on Survivor on one of those islands, I would kill it.
You're going to make it. You're going to tackle the shrimp and then eat it.
Eat it.
You can't eat a live shrimp. That's so weird.
Well, it was dead by the time it went down, I guess.
That feels worse to me than, like, a worm or an ant. A worm or ant, they're small. Like, a shrimp is, like, that thing is, like, getting it. Like, they move. Oh, creeping me out.
I did have to eat crickets once for work. That was also, I did, like, a bug eating party thing.
Were they live crickets?
No, deep fried.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
But,
it's got a lot of protein. What's your favorite food?
My favorite food is sashimi. Huh. Definitely. You can't take the girl out of Maui. I'm a fish eater.
You're just a junkie for the water and the blue.
I am.
See, this is what, can I tell you something? I told you my love level is 150. Let me just tell you something about you. You know, because again, we haven't got to hang out and have drinks together. I don't like you that much. Do you know why? You know why? Just looking at you from afar, you're always smiling. You're always generally happy. It's annoying, frankly. Like, really,
I'm in morning television. Yeah, I don't have a choice.
I am professionally perky. You have a choice. Again, not that I've stalked you, but I've stalked enough to know that seeing you not in the morning time, I've seen you scatter about the daylight, and you're still just always so happy and nice. You know what? I got to come out to one of these practices and see you yell at a kid. I got to see you get aggressive so I can be like, yeah, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. I need to see that kind of Becky. Get the Rebecca out here. We want Rebecca.
Right. I'm going to drop the hammer.
That's
then
right.
You can see what's going on.
That's what I'm trying to see.
You got to pay extra for that.
I'm pretty sure. You're going to be like your own arch villain. You just turn and change yourself. What happened to her? Well, you know, everybody has to go to the dark side eventually. If you've been
we all got a shadow.
Long enough. Dang. So what's your favorite thing in technology right now?
I'd say self-driving cars. I just cannot wait for that technology to be real, feasible, and safe. I like driving, but I despise commuting. And I feel like, you know, living in the Bay Area, so many of the decisions that I make professionally are around avoiding commuting. Which seems insane. I mean,
anybody who's lived in LA knows exactly what you're talking about. Anytime I go to LA, the fact that when you have to have a meeting, you have to plan yourself 2 hours ahead of time just to get there. Like, and you're just sitting in the traffic. You're not even progressing to get somewhere that's only 10 miles away. So that
I just don't know how people do that commute every day. And I mean, now in the Bay Area, at least most people who do tech companies, or a lot of them, they go on the shuttles and they have Wi-Fi. So they're working on their commute. And that makes sense to me. You know, I would love to, and you know, one of the other things about self-driving cars and is that in order to be a self, to create self-driving cars, you really need to have an electric drivetrain. And so the electrification of really all of our transportation, I think, will be really transformative. You know, as an environmentalist, you kind of hope that's coming, and it's nice to see it synthesizing with technology. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. You know, I think media is fascinating right now, and technology and media are really a merged story, as we've seen the emergence of so many. It's so easy to create media that we've had just a glut of it, and people haven't had to be discriminating. They just kind of consumed everything. And now we're having a real pullback as consumers of media realize that technology's made it so accessible that now they really need to be more discriminating and figure out who they're listening to and why. And it's an interesting pullback from technology in a way, because people are going back to more traditional sources or choosing individuals that they have relationships with. You know, as talent, that's what you and I are, is we're the talent. And there was a time over the last 5 or 6 years where I thought, man, we don't really need talent anymore. You know, we can just read and have video, and people can tell their own stories. But what I'm realizing more and more is trust is about people, and who do you trust is more important than what do you trust.
So one, because we made a huge mistake. So saying 30 minutes for this is horrible, because normally I go an hour. But I'm telling myself, and so we have 5 minutes, and then we're going to cut it short. And I'll just have you back on another time, because we're both busy and we got kids to deal with. But first, the driving cars thing. Love driving cars. I hate the fact that I think about the world as losing jobs in a place where we don't have jobs. And the same thing with automation. What are we going to do when all these people are put out of work and cars are just taking over? And I just like driving so much because I love driving. And so I want driving. Second point, to media, you are insanely correct. The problem with media and content right now to me is I feel like journalism itself, especially important journalism, has taken a 50% drop because of the fact of speed. Since everyone can disseminate information and spread information, unfortunately for journalists now, that whole fact-checking and double-checking, maybe you get your information, you got a source, but it's hard to say, well, wait, we need 3 independent sources to confirm whatever. You might get 1.5 and then say, hey, we've got to go because CBS is already running with it and CNN already went with it. And so you kind of get into a situation where these companies are saying, well, it's sourced because they said it. They all might have the same one source. And since no one has the time and you can't take the time anymore, which is why print media is so important, which is why when the president says, now we're talking about politics, but when somebody of power says the papers aren't doing their job, that's the one place where, hey, they've got a full day. They're only putting out one issue a day. So they're doing a little bit better job of trying to discern what's important. Whether in TV, you got to be fast. Or in media, Twitter, Facebook, you've got to be quicker or you get scooped and then you're not valued.
You know, it's fascinating to me that we are looking at these issues of being right and correct, that it's things that I take for granted, but that's because there's not as much transparency as you would think in the mainstream media. And I will tell you that every story I do goes through so many sets of eyes, from our legal department to our standards department to multiple producers and editors. And we have an infrastructure for a lot of the fact checking that we have to do. And, you know, I see my, you know, ABC doubling down on that even more and being more fastidious. And it's been an unintended benefit for journalism, is that we've really had to recommit to the things that we're already doing, but make sure that they now have more value than they ever did. So for me, I see an unintended good consequence from all of this scrutiny and the fact that people are becoming more savvy media consumers and saying, you know what, I gotta go to a source I trust on this, and I gotta go read from the New York Times. I gotta go to ABC.com. I gotta go hear what George Stephanopoulos has to say about this, or hear what, you know, It's so funny to me that I find myself listening a lot right now to David Brooks, who's a conservative columnist who I actually just find to be a voice of reason and a voice of centrism in a time when we're feeling pretty polarized. But people really matter and processes in journalism really matter. And they are happening at the right places. You just got to choose wisely.
What's your favorite color?
Purple.
It's good color royalty. There's power in that. That's my daughter's favorite color.
That's right.
Last question.
Okay, this is exciting.
It's not that exciting.
Oh.
Okay. So, if, excluding Maui.
Okay.
Who would you take with you on an island if you can only take one person?
Oh, that is so hard.
They could be the living, the dead, the future, the past. And don't say me because we already know it.
I'm not going to do my family because that would be really.
One person. You can't take the family unless you're only taking one kid, in which case they're going to look at you funny.
I'm toast. I would be toast if I did that. Okay. One person. All right. I know what it is. And it's continuing my overall theme. Are you ready for this?
Tell me.
I'm going to Fiji with Jacques Cousteau.
You and this Jacques Cousteau person. Look, I I'm not going to compete for your love with Jacques Cousteau because obviously there's nothing anyone can do. Next time I see you, I'm going to make sure I put like a little scuba gear set on and a hat and just make sure I got some bubbles. I might keep a fish around me or something. That's the only way that you're going to care about anybody unless they're Jacques Cousteau. You want them on your Facebook. Now you want them on an island. You just want to go to the bottom of the ocean. That's all.
I'm just living in my own little bubble under the sea.
You are a deep sea junkie. You're Ariel. I know what's going on in your brain. It's just stuck. The Disney got to you. It's a horrible situation.
You know that I wanted to be in television originally because I wanted my own fishing show?
That was my whole motivation. Oh,
I am that much of a freak.
So two fishing videos. I don't know if we're friends on Facebook. I don't think we are. But there's this one fish. The little boy was fishing, and his dad's like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Alligator comes and gets the fish right as he's pulling it out of the water. I was like, wow, that was so cool. Like, it was bad for the kid because it was a nice-sized fish, too. And I felt so bad for that kid. His dad's like, hurry up. And I'm like, what is he talking about? Because he's filming. I guess he already saw the alligator coming. And as soon as he almost got up, now I got a snap. And they're like, oh, we got to cut the line. We got to cut the line because it's just taking the fish out. And I was like, that was so cool. I haven't gone fishing in forever. I want to go fishing again soon. My uncle has a boat. I don't know why I don't do it. I'm a slacker. Where can people find you on the internet? It's easy. I know where they find you.
At Bea Worley is me on Twitter. And then I'm interested in how Facebook is becoming more of a platform for journalists. And I'm the Becky Worley on Facebook. So come and find me there.
I'm going to try and start doing when I get bored at night. I'm going to do Facebook tonight on Twitch. I'm just going to go through my feed and read comments and the stories and the craziness that goes on today. Because I do it anyway. You know, you call up your friend, you're like, did you see that? Like, so I'm going to just gonna sit there online at night when I get bored and do it occasionally a couple nights a week. So you're right. It is an interesting platform for content. So if you're listening to this, if you're watching this, obviously you know now that my love for Becky has increased. It's really hard for
mutual.
It to do.
Don't mutual me.
Don't talk to me like that. I'm not Jacques Cousteau. I know what's going on. It's like, look, you can make up whatever you want. So I get a fish bubble on my brain. You don't care about anybody or anything. I know. Don't you sweet talk me, Becky.
You know, the next time I go fishing in New Jersey, I'm going to go with you.
Well, let's do it. My uncle's got a boat. Okay. Like, so at least I can use the boat. All right.
That's it. Stripers.
That's
We're
right.
We're going for stripers.
That's how we do it. So, again, subscribe on YouTube if you don't have any money, or iTunes if you don't have any money. If you do have money, throw it to me at Patreon. I might shake a little bit for it, and then I could get this alpha scuba set for Becky if I have enough money, because that's the only way that my love can increase for her. This is a tough cookie. This is one of my favorite people in the world. Becky Worley, O Doctor, is DocTales. Woo! And we're out.